Welcome back to Not Too Busy to Write. I'm Penny Winsor, author and book coach. Today, I'm talking to Lily Dunn, author, teacher, and mentor, about her new book, Into Being, The Radical Craft of Memoir and Its Power to Transform. Lily's acclaimed memoir, Since My Father, was a Guardian and Spectator Nonfiction Book of the Year in 2022. In Into Being, Lily takes her extensive experience as a writer, lecturer, and mentor in personal narrative and shares the secrets of transformative memoir. Lily talks about the imagination of personal narrative and literary form, why the best memoirs are revelatory for the reader, the choice between writing fiction and memoir, and the unique trust that exists between reader and author when it comes to memoir and the truth. We also talk about the ethics and challenge of writing about other people, an inevitable experience for anyone writing personal narrative. Into Being is an absolute must-read for anyone embarking on literary memoir or who uses personal narrative in any of their writing. It's out now. This series of the podcast is brought to you by award-winning UK-based audiobook app, Zigzag. Zigzag's aim is to make reading easier, more accessible, engaging, and sustainable so that everyone can enjoy more books. It's subscription-free and is the only audiobook app to accept national book tokens, making it a fantastic gift option too. Zigzag has an exclusive offer for Not Too Busy to Write listeners. Simply download the Zigzag app, that's X-I-G-X-A-G, and use the code TOOBUSY to get your second title completely free. All of the details are in the show notes. Thank you so much to Zigzag for partnering with us for this series. Enjoy the episode. Lily, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
I want to dive straight in. Memoir, as you write about in Into Being, is sometimes accused of, or perhaps we are sort of guilty of doing this ourselves, worrying about it being navel-gazing or being very inward-looking. And I wanted to ask you about that first. One of the things that really struck me when you were writing about writing your own memoir was this idea of, you know, after writing a draft, and perhaps it was after multiple drafts, finally being able to see your relationship clearly with your father. And I wondered if it was that that helped you get past this idea that maybe this is not just about me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are lots of things, lots of reasons why it's not just about me. I think that's a knee-jerk response. And I think it's quite a kind of, it's a slightly sort of literary snobbish response, I think, in that somehow fiction is superior because you're so-called using your imagination. But I think what people don't realize is that in memoir, we are using our imagination as much as we are in fiction. It's just that it's rooted in real life experience. So you're using your life as evidence in a way for something greater, some sort of greater question about humanity, really. So we obviously, as people who write personal narrative, need to touch the very sort of deep nerve of what matters to us in order to write in an authentic and genuine way about true specific experience. But we also have to simultaneously almost draw away from that and see that experience within the context of life, and also, you know, when you come to redrafting, have your head on you know, your head on your readership and think about why this story matters. You know, I think memoir, if you want to be published, it feels like even more necessary to ask yourself those really kind of rigorous questions about why me, why now, why this, you know, because it can be represented, and people, I think, come to it, you know, with that sort of preconceived idea that it's, you know, why are we interested in this one life? Why are we interested in you? You're not famous, you know. So I don't believe that it is navel gazing, but I know that people think that it is. Mm. I think when you write a book about your personal experience and then have it published, when you've worked on your life experience to such a degree over, you know, because it can take years and years. I mean, the people who I mentor who write memoir are often working on them as a sort of life project, you know. you're doing a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hard work on yourself, but also, you know, you're inevitably reading around the subject. You're having conversations with your family members. You know, you're trying to look at it from different points of view. You're entering into writing about others with compassion. You know, it's an incredibly kind of expansive form. When you actually come to publish it and give it to your reader, it becomes a gift, because in a way you've done all that hard work for them. You know, the best memoirs are those that people read and they think, oh my goodness, yes, I never thought of that. You know, they have sort of revelations about their own psychology or their own relationships, because you as writer have done the hard work on yourself. So I see it more as a kind of, I see memoir very much as a relationship form. Like, it, you know, it's a form in which you as writer have a relationship with yourself. You know, you kind of build a dialogue with yourself, but you're also having this very profound relationship with your potential reader and how you articulate that. And that's where all the kind of craft and, you know, sort of beauty comes into it.
Mm. And when you have students, because you do work with students in this, you teach the craft of memoir, how do you help a student move past those initial feelings of this story is too much about me, when in fact memoir is, of course, the beauty of it is the universality of the memoir?
Well, I think it's probably totally normal for all writers to go through that. And often that is the reason why a lot of writers don't write it. You know, they might be kind of haunted by some experience from their past or a sort of family myth that they want to try and upturn and understand. But they just, you know, they can't sit down and write it, or they write it as fiction, they disguise it, you know, which is also fine and completely valuable and you know, and works in itself. I mean, I find actually a really good example of this is Richard Beard, who I quote in my book Into Being, who I had conversations with about his book The Day That Went Missing, because he is a novelist. And his memoir is about his brother who drowned when he was 11 and his brother was 9 in Cornwall. And it was about trying to pin down the truth of how Richard remembered this incident happening, which was not how his family had remembered, because his family had gone into deep denial after his brother's death. And it kept on popping up in his fiction. And he would present certain novels to his family and say, look, you know, let's talk about this. You know, there's this character who keeps on popping into my fiction, who is obviously my brother, you know, and your son. And they still didn't recognize it. They still weren't willing to kind of confront it through the fiction. So he committed to exploring this and really interrogating it through nonfiction, through memoir. It was almost like he had to, in order to really show his family and also, you know, convince himself also, you know, through evidence, through talking to Coast Guard, through going back to people from that time, of, you know, of the facts of what happened. So, I mean, in terms of talking to students, you know, it's helping them recognize that, you know, there are certain stories that are actually asking to be told, you know, and you can do all sorts of convincing yourself that you can't do it for whatever reason. And it often is because you think that it's self-indulgent, or because you're worried that your family are not going to be happy with you writing this and putting it out in the world, which, you know, is a very valid reason not to do it, and is very challenging. It's a very challenging thing to do. So I think, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm ultimately helping a writer to really kind of weigh up how important this story is.
Mm-hmm.
And it may also be that the story does need to be written as fiction, because it may be that there is too much in there that's too dangerous to sort of put out as nonfiction. Or it may be that the story is not big enough to publish as memoir, in that it's not universal enough. It's not going to have enough of a kind of resonance outside of it being simply one experience that happened, you know, in 1975 and affected one particular person. So I think these are all kind of conversations that you're working out in the early stages of drafting. Because, you know, really, I mean, as you know, memoir and fiction, they're so interchangeable, you know, that they're only really labels. I mean, they are defining labels and they're important labels, but there are lots of memoirs that verge into fiction or use speculative elements, and there are lots of novels that are based very closely on fact. So, you know, whether you choose to overtly write a memoir or a novel can be interchangeable through the process of writing it.
I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because I wanted to ask you about honesty, because it comes up a number of times in Into Being, and I find it such an interesting question, and about this idea of fiction and nonfiction and what is what, because memoir, I've always felt memoir is a kind of fiction. I mean, it's not, it's factual, and I don't think it's untruthful. It is truthful. But there is an element of construction around it. We have to kind of create a narrative where perhaps there wasn't one in order to be able to tell the truthful story that we want to tell. And I wanted to ask you about this because for me, the difference is the kind of contract between the reader and the author, and that there is a kind of implicit contract when I pick up a memoir that I know some of this is constructed or perhaps reconstructed, depending on how you want to look at it, that's very different to when I pick up a novel.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. A memoir is a constructed narrative because it's you're very, very much more dictated by story and the parameters of story and fictional technique in its telling, rather than an autobiography, which is more factual and more chronological. And so you're not necessarily thinking in terms of theme and story motivation and drive, you know, that sort of quest through the story that you would be in memoir. But the difference, and I think this is a really important difference with memoir, is that honesty question. Because I think if you label something with true story, and we've seen the fallout of this when it has been labeled with true story and then has been contested, the contract between the reader and the author breaks. So there is a deeper investment, isn't there, in a reader if they know that this is truth. And, you know, obviously within that truth question, there's all sorts of kind of nebulousness and kind of difficult areas of memory and what is true and what's you know, faltered and merged and very hard to pin down. But the difference with a narrator of a memoir is that they will be transparent about that. So you have the dual perspective often in memoir, where you have the narrator's voice as the person who's writing the book and looking back at the past in order to find meaning in past experience. And so you're kind of moving between that reflective stance into the more showing, immediate, you know, recalling of memory or scene setting of the past. And then you're drawing out again and you're finding meaning and you're questioning and reflecting. And that's where you might be drawing on psychoanalysis or science or nature or, you know, whatever that sort of parallel nonfiction element might be, which a lot of memoirs have. So it's much more conversational in that, you know, you as reader have a relationship, you build a relationship with the personality of the person who's writing this, who is the author and the narrator. So, and that also enables the author to say when they can't remember something, or say when that memory might be incorrect, or say that they weren't actually there to witness that scene, but and so they imagine it. You know, this is speculation, this is speculative. Or even, you know, signal when they're moving into fictional territory, which some memoirs do. So, but it's the reliability of the author's voice and their commitment to being honest and transparent to the reader, which I think is what kind of elevates it from being something fictional.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? This idea of transparency in memoir, because I've read lots of memoirs which do delve into some, I guess you could call almost fictional elements in terms of imagining things that they weren't able to be present for, or perhaps nobody was able to be present for. And yet when I have an established relationship with the voice on the page, I will go wherever they take me.
Yeah. 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 Cause it's, I mean, I think memoir, good memoir is as much world building as fiction. You know, once you've entered into that world and you understand what that world is doing, you believe it, you know, and you're there next to them. And actually the transparency might just be at the beginning.
Mm.
And then you know that this is, these are certain techniques that the author is going to use. And then you don't need to keep on reminding the reader.
Mm.
A good example of that is Carmen Maria Machado's In the Dream House, which, you know, in a way is sort of described as a hybrid memoir because it so overtly uses fictional technique. And it also, it's a kind of meta form, isn't it? Because it also comments on other genres like horror and gothic and she's also quite academic, so she's kind of jumping around with these different quite experimental ways of writing her story. And in the early parts of that book, she's very explicit about what she's doing, so she also plays with tenses as well. She addresses herself as you, as a certain persona, and then as I, as a more rounded kind of fulfilled persona. But she'll be explicit about it at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So once we understand it, it's quite an interesting book to kind of go back and read a second time and dissect, because you realize actually it's all there at the start. And then once you understand it, you're just there. You're in the story, you know, and you believe it, and you're holding her hand and she's taking you through. So yeah, I think that's a good point. And that's something that, you know, you can work on at the editing stage. You can look at how you signal things and realize that you don't need to be doing it all the time.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about structure. You write in the book about structure often has to come out of the writing, that the writing comes first and the structure will make itself kind of known to you. And this is so interesting to me because as someone who works with writers on book proposals, I do sometimes have memoirists come to me and I want to do a book proposal for their memoir, which obviously if they have their manuscript is a sort of fairly straightforward, you know, thing to help them with. But some people come to me not wanting to write the manuscript and wanting to write a proposal for their memoir. And occasionally that works. But for so many people, my advice is, oh, please, please, I think you need to be writing this. You need to be going forth. So it was really interesting to hear you talk about that. How... for you, that experience when you wrote Sins of My Father, how far into the process of exploring memory, exploring, kind of researching, putting your father onto the page, putting your experience onto the page, did the shape come together for you for the book?
Yeah, it took a long time with that book. And I think that was partly because it started as a series of essays that I had published. So I didn't really start it as a book. I think I sort of found my way into realizing that there was a book. And then the second draft of, so it kind of started, so I just had all these collections of different experiences and different sort of thematic approaches to the material, which I thought maybe I could throw all together and make a bit of a mishmash of a book, but it didn't work. So then the second draft, I realized that I needed a chronology because there was quite a lot of repetition and it wasn't clear, you know, there was no sort of proper chronological spine. So then I sort of then broke it down into a chronology, but I realized that I then had lost a lot of that critical edge that I liked about the essays. So I did a final draft, and actually the final draft involved starting in a completely different place. And that was quite interesting because when I rethought about the beginning, and started in a very dramatic place, it somehow kind of helped me. It helped the narrative sort of fall into place. And I realized then that because it was a book about my father, but it was also a book about me, that it would sort of start with his narrative from his childhood, then through, and then there would be crossover points when my life would begin, and then I would cross over, and then my emphasis would be more on my life, and then we'd come back together again. And then he died at the end, and I kind of, you know, I sort of flew the nest in a way. But that was an organic process. That was not something that I thought through until I was actually writing it. But that's always been the way that I write. I'm not very good at structuring things in advance. And I wish I was, because I think I waste a lot of time working it out. I know that from having spoken to other memoirists, you know, that some find structure a really helpful kind of container, you know, that it sort of helps them limit, particularly when you're looking at working out a whole life, you know, it can be really overwhelming. Mm. So actually sort of coming up with a clever structure, you know, if that were sort of a series of vignettes or sort of short pieces, which I think can work really well with memoir, it's almost like you're just working small, you know, you're working with what's immediately in front of you, and then it may be a matter of just collaging it together. And that can also work. But I, like you, do tend to encourage writers to write the first draft, because, you know, you're not going to know what your story is about, and what the kind of main themes are that you want to explore until you've written it, I don't think. Unless you've got a very kind of clear nonfiction drive in the memoir, and then it might be easier if it's very obvious what those chapters are.
Mm.
But I think, you know, proposal writing doesn't really lend itself to memoir writing.
Yeah, I know, it's a really interesting thing, and I often spend a bit of time on the phone with writers trying to kind of work out whether or not they're ready for this process of writing proposal or not. And as you said, it is the writers who are sort of leaning much more heavily nonfiction that I think writing a proposal can really work for, because they've got their strong thread already. They've got almost, and I love what you say about it being a container, because I always describe structure and nonfiction as a container. And if we just think of it as a container that needs to kind of hold the ideas for the readers that we want it to hold, it can be such a much sort of easier way of thinking about it than structure, which feels sometimes a little bit more abstract.
Mm.
Or perhaps even scaffolding. Actually, that's, you mentioned the word scaffolding in quite a few times, which can be super helpful as well. But yeah, sometimes when I think, particularly with memoir, because we're so close to the material, that sometimes we almost need to have it on the page to separate ourselves out ever so slightly from it. Would you agree that that's sometimes part of the process of writing?
Oh, I think it's a huge part of the process, yeah. Because, you know, we just carry it around with us otherwise, don't we? It's like, you know, we've got this kind of backpack of past experience. It's weighing us down. And whereas, you know, I think writing about it, you start to take that backpack off, just extend on this memoir. And, you know, when you have finished your book, you can put it on the shelf. You can actually put it apart from yourself. And I found that an incredibly liberating experience with mine. It was quite interesting last night, actually. I was doing an event for Interbeing, and Richard Kerridge, who's the head of the MA at Bath Spa University, came, and he was talking to me briefly about the question of the problem of when you write memoir, you know, how your everyday person who doesn't write, their past is a very fluid thing. And, you know, you will think about the past and you'll be affected by it, but then some days you might be upset by it, other days you'll be fine with it. You know, some days you might remember this, other days you remember that. You know, it's something that is shifting and changing all the time. When you write a memoir about it, you're solidifying it, you're capturing it, you're capturing that time, you're making it into a fact, really, actually. You're saying this happened then and this is what the result was of that thing. And he questioned whether I thought that was a problematic thing or not. And I said, well, I think it really depends on the book, because in my case with my father, it felt really important because his influence on me had been so sort of insidious and so relentless almost, you know, in that it had affected so much of my life and the decisions I had made, whether I had really been conscious of it or not. Whereas in my writing about him and writing about myself in relationship to him, I was able to identify that as his problem. It wasn't mine. You know, it was due to his decision making. It was due to, you know, he was the responsible adult and I had been affected by him. And so it became a really important act of kind of reclamation for me to reclaim myself as apart from him, and also elevate my voice and my experience above his. And so in that case, I think it was really important that I could do that. And then I could put it away and say, okay, I don't need to think about that anymore. I'm going to move on.
Mm.
You know, there are lots of other stories in one's life that perhaps you don't want to concretize in that way, because it could be detrimental to people that you love, or it could be detrimental to certain relationships.
Mm.
You know, you could be naming something that you don't want to be associated with many years down the line, you know, so you have to think about these things, I think. It's an interesting conundrum with memoir.
Mm. Really interesting. And in fact, although I haven't written memoir, I've used personal narrative quite a lot in my nonfiction. And I, like you, have written about my mother and my mother's very sort of difficult struggle with mental illness and its impact on me when I was still a child. And writing about that was a really interesting experience, because there is this sense of responsibility, and maybe perhaps I felt differently about it because of how much I felt like I was a protector of my mother's image in the world after she had died, and we were very, very close. And the end of her life didn't represent her whole life, but it did have a huge impact on me and my life. And sort of trying to work out the balance between those things. And I remember reading over and over all of the kind of personal narrative in my first book about her, and trying to step back and see how does she, the character, now appear to the reader? Does it reflect how her, a whole person, rather than this one portion of her life that had a, you know, that obviously had a massive impact on the immediate family as well as her, but it didn't represent all of her.
Yeah, and I think that is really important, isn't it? Because it's about writing with compassion, and if we're writing about other people, you have to see them as more than just, you know, I mean, you've got to write them as genuine characters.
Mm-hmm.
But that also poses a real problem, because a lot of people don't want to be written about that way. You know, in the case of your mother, she'd passed away, and the same with my father, which has its own sort of ethical problems, because they're not there to defend themselves. But, you know, if you were writing about somebody in your life who was still living, you know, how would you write about them in that really full way and not offend them, because your view is always going to be different from how they see themselves. So, you know, it's a really difficult thing to do.
Yeah, really challenging. And for the memoirs that I've worked with, it has, and for many I've spoken to on the podcast, the question of ethics comes up again and again. And I really loved the way you talked about Into Being, about this idea of forming your own sort of ethical code of conduct and deciding what the lines are for you, because the lines are going to be different for every single author, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And that was why I decided, because I, for Into Being, it wasn't actually a part of the research for Into Being, but it became part of the research for Into Being. I interviewed a number of memoirists. That came out of me writing Sins of My Father and having it published, and battling with people. Like when I told them that I'd written a memoir, you know, people's immediate response was like, oh, misery memoir, you know, have you written a misery memoir? And I'd be like, no, it's not a misery memoir. And so I was sort of thinking, well, what is it? And I sort of came up with this concept of the aesthetic memoir, because for me, writing my book about my dad it was really important for me to elevate it from it just being the facts of a life and my life and my relationship to him. I wanted it to be a piece of, kind of, without sounding pretentious, literary art. You know, I wanted it to be something that people would enjoy despite the content. And so often when you write memoirs, you know, people ask you questions about the content rather than the way you've written it. They don't really ask you questions about craft, whereas they do when you write memoir. When you write fiction. But writing memoir, you are using craft and literary technique as much as you are when you're writing fiction. So I wanted to kind of address that, but also I was interested in the kind of the transformative quality of writing memoir and how this had changed these memoirists' lives, you know, how their relationship to the original experience had changed through the process of writing it. So I did a series of interviews, which I put on my website. And then they became this really valuable resource for Into Being when I came to write that. So in the ethics chapter, I quote quite extensively from these interviews because I thought it was really interesting to just show the very wide variety of how you might go about, you know, that sticky question of how do you manage your family's expectations and feelings about writing about them. And, you know, it's such a varied response from people, mm. you know, from like Kit Duvall, who shared her manuscript with every one of her siblings and gave them complete veto over whether, you know, what was included and what not. And if they had come back and said, no, this didn't happen and you can't put that in the book, she would have taken it out. And she approached her memoir writing very much as a collaborative process with her siblings. To Marina Benjamin, who felt really strongly that it was wholly her responsibility as the writer and that she would take the consequences of that because she was the one who had made that decision to include that detail. But she also, as a kind of counterpoint, would be as harsh on herself as a character as she would be on any of her family members. And I thought that had a lot of integrity, actually, and that kind of appealed to me. And I think also it's just, you know, we are writers and we are mining personal experience and it is really difficult and it does cause pain and it does cause problems for some people because a lot of people don't understand why you would do it. Why would you publish private details about a family, you know? And so it's something that you really, really have to think through and you have to keep on questioning yourself. I mean, not to the point that it completely stops you in your tracks, but I think certainly later down the line when you're editing and you're kind of taking this really seriously and thinking, actually, this does have legs, it could stand as a published book. I think, you know, it's you are constantly asking yourself those questions. So by the time it comes out, you know, and also you're having those discussions with, you know, editors and lawyers as well through the publishing process. So by the time it comes out, you have actually kind of gone over the same ground again and again. So, yeah, I mean, there's a brilliant book called Permission by Alyssa Altman, which is an American book. You can get it on audio here. And she addresses this very thing brilliantly because she fell out. She became estranged from her family for publishing her memoir. And has thought long and hard about it. But yeah, I think that's a great recommendation for people if they are worried about these issues.
Mm, that's a really good recommendation. Thank you. Because it certainly comes up quite a lot with the writers I work with, many of whom come to me haven't quite decided whether or not something they've experienced in their life should be told as memoir or should be turned into nonfiction.
Yeah.
Because of the sort of interesting things they can unearth around it. And my advice, and I'd be really interested to hear what you would say about this, but my advice has always generally been memoir is a very particular creative endeavor and literary endeavor. And if you feel called to write it, if you feel compelled, if you have that deep curiosity to explore it as a creative medium, then you should just do it personally. And actually one of the joys about publishing being so slow is that there are so many kind of points along the journey to remove, change, disguise, that I don't think we should be doing that at all in the first draft at all.
No, you mustn't do it in the first draft because you'll lose the point of the whole thing. And it will come across as tentative and withholding and evading and not honest, you know, and you can read that. I mean, I have that happen a lot, interestingly, with, you know, in my mentor relationships with writers, where you know that they are circling something, that they're too scared to write it because of, you know, feelings of shame. I mean, we're all so affected by shame. And, you know, I think memoir can be a really good place to kind of really explore that. So rather than expose the thing that you're ashamed of, you can explore the shame around that thing. You know, you could actually not, you don't necessarily need to write it. Mm-hmm. You can write into it. You can write the issues around it. And that can be really interesting because also, you know, the reader has an imagination, so they are able to fill in the gaps. And I've read some really interesting kind of trauma narratives that actually don't write the trauma itself, but they are implying it, you know, in a very kind of delicate way.
Mm.
By the way that, but you have to know what it is that you're writing about, and in a way you have to write it first in order to cut it out. Because then I think sometimes, you know, the writing can kind of hold the essence of that thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's almost like, and, you know, having quite a lot of friends that have written memoirs and read various different drafts at different stages before it ends up in its published form. It's almost like when something needs to be removed, often for legal reasons, the shadow of it can be left behind, and
yeah.
It can be felt quite intensely by the reader without you having to be explicit about it on the page.
Yeah, and I think that can be really powerful. Another really good example that I give to people worried about exposing too much is Rachel Cusk's Aftermath, mm-hmm. Which is about her marriage separation. And it's so cleverly done because she writes about the day, this is just one example of what she does. She does multiple things, but she writes about the day that her husband moves his stuff out of the house. But she's not writing about that. She's writing about having a tooth extraction that day with the dentist. I think it's that day or it's around that time. But she's focusing on the tooth extraction, but through her interpretation of this tooth that has grown at an angle and is slightly odd and doesn't sort of fit in properly in her mouth and needs to be extracted, is of course the whole of her marriage. And it's so cleverly done. So you don't need the details.
Mm.
You just need, because memoir is written from feeling. It's an exploration of emotion, and actually how you interpret that on the page is really down to skill and technique. So I think you can have an awful lot of fun kind of playing with ways of writing but not writing it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about this idea of consent. You talk a little bit in Into Being about writing about children and some of the challenges that that brings up, or just in general, anyone who can't give consent. And we've already both mentioned, we've both written about a parent who has died and so can't consent.
Mm.
But I'm really interested in this idea of children particularly. It was something that came up with me when I was writing my first book, is about unpaid care. So as somebody who is in a position where the responsibility I have, and in fact, my whole life is very much kind of dominated by this particular relationship and this particular experience. And obviously, I'm extremely careful about how I write about it, because there is another person involved who will probably very likely never in his life be able to give consent because of his learning disability. And yet, at the same time, if we sort of exclude these narratives completely from the world, then there is a whole lot of people who will never, ever have their stories ever in the world. And those women, those people are most likely to be women. But also, you know, you could say that actually loads of relationships would be sort of missing from the world if we didn't feel able to write about some things. I'm really curious to hear your thoughts about areas like that, around areas of children or other people who can't give consent to be included in a narrative.
I think it's down to the individual situation. I think if you're a carer of somebody, then I think you have a right to tell your story and your version of events of that person's life, because in a way you're an advocate to them anyway. I think one thing I write about in Into Being is how, well, I mean, this is kind of a suggestion. It's not necessarily something I know to be true. But that when children are wholly dependent on us, that we possibly have the right to consent for them, you know, when they're really young, and we're not necessarily writing. We're not sort of, when we're writing about our children, we're not necessarily writing from within them. We're not pretending to know what they feel, but we're certainly writing about our relationship with them, or you know, what it brings up for us. It's still a narrative that's driven by us and our look, our perspective on the world. But they get to a point when they become teenagers where they are finding themselves, and that is a very important process for them, that they are coming into understanding themselves. And I think at that point, as a parent, you have to be very mindful that your interpretation of that could imprint on them, in that it can repress them or it can affect them. Like my experience was very much affected by my father's kind of, you know, chaotic life. But when you're caring for somebody who has learning difficulties, who may never grow to be an individual from their parent, I don't know what the circumstances are, perhaps it does throw up that question of consent and how much it still belongs to a carer and how much it belongs to them. And I imagine that it's just a very sort of sensitive line that you have to play through the writing and through the questioning. So I don't think one can ever put oneself into somebody else. I mean, you can't, because they're always going to be, there are private things that they experience that we could never know. And so you can't assume that you know, and you shouldn't assume that you know, however much you know them, because that's somehow taking away their voice. Mm-hmm. It's somehow taking away their autonomy. But I think you can ask the right questions, and you can ask questions around this issue as part of your writing. And I think, you know, a carer of somebody, whether it is a child with learning difficulties or not, absolutely has a right to write their experience of that. I mean, that's kind of my view. I think it's a really tricky area. But there is something about teenagers in the natural kind of growth that they go through, where they, part of being a 16, 17, 18 year old is finding your own voice and your own autonomy and finding your own view of the world and claiming your own memories apart from your parents. And there's something about being a memoirist as a parent that can be, that if you're not careful, can squash that and trash that, because you're solidifying something from your view that then can become their reality without them realizing it's their reality. See what I mean? Because they haven't actually realized their own reality.
Yeah, no, I think that's such an interesting way of putting it, and so important because of this idea of the permanence of memoir, as we talked about in the beginning. Mm. This idea that it's now on the shelf. Mm. It is version of us, of them, of whoever is represented in that memoir. I mean, I have no plans to write about my children again. I did need to in that first book. I have no plans to do it again. But I'm also really curious about this question, because in case I do want to do it in the future, this idea that actually he couldn't ever represent himself in terms of publicly, in terms of his own voice. And so, yeah, it just brings up a really interesting question about who gets to represent who. It's something I'm endlessly fascinated with. I don't think there is necessarily an answer to it, but it's a really interesting question.
You as his carer can absolutely write about your own experience of that. And I think that those are the stories, aren't they, that do need to be told, because they're often private stories. They're stories that don't get an airing. And I think they're incredibly important, actually.
Yeah, and in fact, actually, when my first book came out, I did have comments from people saying that parents of disabled children should never speak about their experience ever because it's a violation, which I thought was really interesting, and I completely disagree with.
Yeah.
Although I do think any parent has a huge responsibility to anything they commit to a page, and particularly if you're committing something to a page where your child's experience is very different from your own. My child's experience of life is extremely different to how mine has been. Mm. And so yeah, there is a huge amount of responsibility to kind of always be constantly aware that I am not in his shoes in any way. And we have different perspectives. But yeah, it is a really interesting question. And I was really intrigued by when you brought up the Julia Myerson book when she wrote about her teenager and the controversy that brought about, because she was writing about a teenage boy that she then claimed had given consent, but then he claimed that he really actually wasn't truly given consent. He wasn't really given much choice. And this idea of what consent actually means in general, and, you know, can anyone anyway of 16, 15, 16, 17 truly give consent? Because can they really understand the impact that this sort of having this down on paper will have on them in the future?
But you see, I don't think anyone can really give consent about memoir and how it's going to be perceived. You know, I think this is a really important thing to hold as someone who writes personal narrative, because, you know, even a grown person has no idea what it's going to feel like to have aspects of their life that they didn't write, that they didn't choose to put out there in the world, solidified for people to read who they don't know, or even people they do know who then know this aspect of their life that they hadn't put out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, and let alone a teenager who really has no idea, because they've never lived a life as a writer. You know, they don't know, they're not thinking about that. They're in the immediacy of getting on with their mates and getting through their exams or, you know, whatever. So I think, you know, whether you do it or not is another thing. You know, it comes back to that thing of, you know, it at the heart of every writer is a shard of glass, you know, or you have to spill some blood to be a memoirist, you know, and you do. So whether you choose to do it for reasons that perhaps are bigger than the fallout is a choice that you have to take responsibility for as a writer, and you have to have the reasons why it's an important choice to make, and you have to then stand by your choice when that book is out there.
Mm.
And I had all of this with Sins of My Father. I had all sorts of surprise responses to that none of us could have predicted until the book was out. But I knew that it was an important book, and I still stand by that. And I'm sorry that it caused harm, but I don't regret writing it. So I think this is all part of that kind of rigorous questioning of yourself and your motivations, really.
Yeah, because in order to be radically honest in a memoir, there perhaps is often going to be a tiny element of harm, you know, I guess, I suppose, right, in the sense that some people will want to remain in denial about the honest truth.
Or people just don't want, they're not, you know, they just don't want it out there, which they have absolute right over.
Mm.
So why would they? Lots of people live very privately and they don't, you know, I mean, I completely understand that.
Mm.
And then there are people like us who are different.
Mm.
And I mean, I think it's really worth making a point here of, you know, like through sort of Substack culture where they're just everybody's writing personal narrative, everybody's exposing their inner truth, everybody's delving deep and sort of writing tricky stuff and sharing it, and that's liberating and it's great. You know, we are very much in that culture now, aren't we, of kind of oversharing. And I think it's really important. And that all has its place. And, you know, in Substack, it's great because you can keep stuff behind a paywall and you have control over what goes out. You can then delete it if you want to. You can unpublish it. But a memoir that is published and given to a publisher, and so it's not wholly yours, and then it is given out to the world as a gift, you know, and then you have no control over it.
Mm.
It has to be doing something different in that you have to be so sure that you have written the best book that you could have written in terms of kind of, you know, being compassionate, being aware of how that might affect other people, you know, checking, you know, you're going to have a lawyer check through it. You're going to have your editor. You've got to trust by the time it's out there that you can stand by it as the best possible thing that you could have done. Because you are going to be questioned on it. but you still can't predict how other people are going to perceive it.
Mm.
So I just think it's, you know, it, you are going much deeper in a memoir. You are, you should be going deeper, and it takes a long time for a reason, because it, you need to have that distance. You need to be able to reflect and have that space to really think about what you're doing and the consequences of that.
Mm. I would love to ask you a little bit about your work as a mentor and a teacher. Often, you know, people are really looking for places in which they can kind of go and explore these ideas, perhaps early on, or perhaps actually quite a way into the process. Tell me a little bit about London Lit Lab.
London Lit Lab, I set up with Zoe Gilbert years ago. We've come up to kind of 10 years now that we've been teaching for London Lit Lab. We started teaching together in London in person, and we're very different writers. Zoe writes fiction and is very influenced by folklore and sort of more fantastical fiction, and I sort of morphed more into memoir. But, you know, we bring very kind of different skills to our teaching, but it's a very intimate and friendly approach to teaching, and now mentoring as well. But during the pandemic, we put it all online. And so, yeah, because now I live in Bristol and Zoe lives in Folkestone, we don't tend to do face-to-face teaching anymore, although I miss it. I mean, I teach at Busby University, but yeah, we run these courses, and we also run external courses for other tutors as well. And we do a lot of mentoring one-to-one. Got this course running called Memoir Bootcamp, which starts in February, which is, it's quite a long course in that it's 3 months long, but it's a, we have like regular meetups on Zoom, and it's 10 people. And it's like a little micro version of what it would be like out in the world if you were publishing memoir. So it's preparing people for that. Helping them kind of get their submissions ready if they are serious about publishing memoir. So, you know, quite creative teaching, really, and very much sort of responding to the needs, you know, what's come our way, and trying to sort of fulfill that in some way. And we do like monthly workshops that we both run. Zoe runs them on a Monday night, and I run them on a Thursday night for people who have work in progress manuscripts and want to have peer-to-peer support for those as well.
Fantastic. I'm going to put all of those in the show notes. I'm sure there'll be lots of interest in that. Thank you so much for being with me here today. It's so lovely to delve into the world of memoir, and into the craft of it as well. It's been really fascinating. Thank you so much for being here.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Penny.